everybody. Welcome to another episode of BTC 2.0. I'm going to keep it nice and short this week. My guest is Chris Arant. He's a writer, he's an editor, and I think most importantly, he is a comics ambassador. What a career he's had in comics media, and he's a super nice guy, and that's what you want. Check out our interview here. Hey guys, welcome to the show, Chris Arant. Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely, man. We've been trying to get this together for a few weeks now, and I appreciate the time you've taken and the appropriate steps you've taken to come on here. So how's it going, man?
It's going good. I really appreciate you being patient with me. I know when you first reached out, things were going on behind the scenes that I couldn't quite say, but I'm glad you were patient with me as I made some changes in life, and I'm now here at ReadPop.
That's awesome. Yes, you are formerly of Games Radar and Newsarama. I would say famously within the comic community, and now you're the editor-in-chief of ReadPop, man. That's awesome. So congratulations from me to you. I've been following you for quite some time online. I would be remiss. I'm not trying to mince words, but I'm trying to say this appropriately. I want to say you're an unsung hero of comics, but I feel like you're very sung. You have a lot of positivity and a lot of great stuff that's out there, and you're very respected in the community. And as far as I can tell, fans of comics love you. How did this get started?
First, I appreciate those loads of comments. I don't know how to take that. I need to be able to accept that graciously. So thank you. I've been really fortunate. I've had a lot of good breaks. I've done a lot of hard work, but I've had a lot of good breaks and a lot of people that have helped me along the way, either directly or just helped me by, I don't know, just listening to me over time and as I go through these things. And I wouldn't say I'm an overnight success. I don't think anybody's an overnight success. It's all about just preparation, dedication, and being there through the rough times to be able, when an opportunity happens, to be able to take advantage of that. When I graduated high school, journalism wasn't the thing I was interested in. It was actually drawing comics. Mm-hmm. When I graduated high school, I was really into Image Comics, particularly the work of Travis Charest. Oh, nice. I really wanted to draw like him. And as the people who have tried to draw like him can attest, that's unobtainable goal. And I feel like I got too close to the sun in that regards and got burnt out by that. But through that, I kind of fell back into a love for graphic design. So in college, I would switch my majors a couple times and ended up at a graphic design. So for about 8 years full-time and then part-time for several years later, I was doing graphic design, primarily print graphic design. But through that, I had a love of comics that went back through childhood. And after I left, in the early 2000s, I left the position as a curator for a museum and began what became about a 15-year freelance career where the main thing was doing graphic design. But in that space, there was also time for me to take a chance and do journalism. I took journalism classes in high school. I took journalism classes in college. But my love of comics kind of brought me to there and saw the opening, saw works of people like Matt Brady at Newsarama, Heidi McDonald at Publishers Weekly, Comics Buyer's Guide, The Pulse, and later The Beat, and the work of Jonah Weiland at CBR. This was really early days for web journalism, and I wanted to be a part of that. So I stubbornly, I don't know if it's just the white male in me, just thought, hey, why not just ask? And so I asked, and I actually got in a foot in the door. Jonah and Matt were both very kind to me. Heidi was kind in other ways and helped me later on. But to really get a foothold, the first place that I wrote for was CBR. I actually did a fill-in column when Rich Johnston did a rumor column there. It's Rich Johnston's rumor column back then is different than Bleeding Cool now, but I did a fill-in for them. And then at about the same time, though it didn't manifest till later, as I began writing regularly for Newsarama, like my first actual published interview about comics was interviewing Kurt Busiek and Stuart Eminem for Superman's Secret Identity, which at the time I thought was a big deal. But now later, that's like even bigger deal. Like that's something I'd like to do now. Like just thinking out loud, that's maybe something I should do at some point.
Yeah.
Either just for my own career sakes, but also because that's a really amazing book. But through that, I've been really fortunate. Like I freelanced for Newsarama from the early 2000s to 2015. I freelanced for several other places during that time with Heidi at Publishers Weekly, with Marvel, with CBR again, with Tokyo Pop, iFanboy, a little bit for MTV, like Entertainment Weekly. I was in some of their magazines. And different places, and slowly, like over that course, like at the beginning, it was mostly design and a little bit of writing, and slowly that kind of flipped where it became mostly writing. That's just putting in a lot of work, writing a lot of different styles, pitching a lot of ideas, and just writing a lot of words. Like my word count was in like the not in the thousands per day. It was probably like 10,000, 20,000 per day. Not all of it was published. Some of it was just corresponding with five or six different companies about work and things like that. But just going through that grind, like I was really fortunate that I was able to make a living out of it. And I had a supportive wife who had a job with health benefits. Because as a freelancer here in the U.S., you pay for your own benefits. And that can be a big thing. So I was very fortunate to that. It came to the point where... in 2015, a position opened up for me to become editor of Newsarama, succeeding the previous person, and then who was before that, Matt Brady. And I really took well to that because I'd been freelancing for them for years, and like, editing was the next step for me. And it was a staff position with benefits, but also this was pre-pandemic. They finally became open to the idea of people working remotely, which up until the mid-2010s was a foreign concept. Even within comics journalism for staff writers. I know CBR had like offices in Los Angeles. Newsarama had offices in New York. Heidi was based in New York. But in 2015, I kind of found a place. Like for different reasons, I wasn't like able to relocate for a position. But in 2015, kind of the perfect scenario came along for me to do that. But and instead of speaking about my career at this point, segue into what I was able to write about, I was able to write about some amazing things. It was interesting. For the first 15 years, like the things that I were a fan of, I wouldn't get to write as much as I thought of, but I began to write about other things and learn about creators at a different level than just as a reader, but just as creators, as real people. Like everybody knows that, but in being able to interview them, spend time with them, I could really see that in a much different way. And so it kind of implicitly became a goal of mine to basically feature that more. And then probably 2017, I figured out that explicitly that's what I wanted to do, because I love comics, but I think the key thing is I love the creativity of the people behind it, kind of going back to me wanting to be an artist in the 90s. And kind of emulate Travis Charest is just the people involved and about the work that they do. When I became at Newsarama, I also got the chance to go to more conventions, and I could see more directly besides just at comic shops and dealing in the forums. I want to give a plug to the talk at Newsarama forums of the early 2000s for people that know those. But now, like social media, but I got to go to conventions and see a different side of it, and just the other side of that people equation to comics. It's the people that make comics, the comics, and then the people that enjoy them. And I consider myself, I've made a few comics, but I'm more the people that enjoy them. But I'm fortunate in my role to be able to go between those two things and help communicate the ideas that go back and forth, and help give context to that. In some cases, that's what journalism is about, communicating complex ideas in a relatable way, or finding a different angle on stuff. And in some cases, it's just being transparent and just giving a place to showcase a talent, as in a person, or just a amazing work created by a person, or to show how fandom has reacted to that. And I feel like I've given you a pretty rambling answer, so I'll pause for a second and let you chime in.
No. Listen, that was fantastic. I appreciate guests who are able to really succinctly go on. And listen, yeah. I'm a big fan of verbosity, if that's a word. I enjoy your, I'm just going to piggyback on what you just said. Like, I'm a big fan of your Twitter feed because of the context and because it's very positive. And I think, you know, even if we consider ourselves amazing fans of certain things that we like, there is some toxicity that seeps in. And I will say, from my personal experience, looking at the stuff that you post on your page, I'm like, ah, this is great. This is exactly what I love. You know, somebody who just is not only a fan of comics, but in the business and a proponent of good work. You know, I do think we need more of that. The impetus behind this show in a video format is to be able to do 100 creator interviews, basically of people I like, you know, and I like what you said before. It's people behind the process that really make this stuff work. And if you can get a little bit of an insight into that creative mind and have somebody express it and have somebody watch it, read an interview, see an interview, I think it just furthers comicdom as like a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I really think of just seeing how comics are made and how grueling it can be and how it's not for everybody. And,
right.
But also just there's, I don't know. There's not enough. There's more talent than there is opportunity. So in some cases, that's about some talent creating the opportunity. And I know that's hard. Like, as a former freelancer myself, like, that's a hard thing to do. Like, comics is mainly a freelance thing. So I think there needs, I don't think, like, I do try to be positive, especially in social media, not because it's not authentic, but I think there's a, it's easy to overlook how much work it takes to make comics and how much right. work it takes, the sacrifices it takes to make a career out of comics. And that's a very hard thing to do. And I don't judge people negatively who only do it part-time or only do it for periods and take a break and right. do other things. Like, it is unfortunate that it's that way. I don't think I'm 100% positive at the sake of overlooking or forgetting the negative. Like, unfortunately, there are bad things that happen in life, and there's bad things happen in comics, and there is people that do bad things that
yeah,
I think we all regret that they happened, and hopefully those people can come to learn to regret and maybe do better. Like, I do focus on that, but with that, I try to be very sensitive to everybody's experience, be it the, I don't know if it's like the uppercase letter victims or just the people that are impacted by it, and just kind of, because I don't want to get too into it, but like, I try to treat that just as respectfully, but also not sweep it under the rug, but really give it the attention to do it right. Because especially when it's something really important and something really strong, you have to do it the right way. Because if you're one or two degrees off, like, it can be really, it can affect how impactful the work can be just by having those one or two things that were wrong or not phrased the right way, just really diminish the potential of the piece. I'm not afraid to call out bad things. I just try to be very specific and know the situation before I weigh in. Like, I'm something I'm constantly teaching and learning myself is to you don't have to fill every silence with words, and to think about things before you speak. Mm-hmm. And that becomes even stronger when bad things happen. But with good things happens, it's pretty like easy to be complimentary to somebody, not fake compliments, just amazing work. Like, we're very fortunate that there's amazing creators in comics, like comic artists, comic letterers, comic writers, comic like editors, all that. And they, we as comics fans are very privileged that the comics community is very open. Like, when I speak to journalists and other categories, just the access that comic creators give us not just through interviews to journalists, but just through social media is unprecedented. Like maybe the closest thing, maybe I'm partial, is like pro wrestling. But even that, to the degree that comic creators do, is far more than that. Like I'm doing some interesting things here at Read Pop, where I'm getting, where I would be casually in those other areas, I get to explore that further and just see how different it is in different forms of comics and the creator's relationship with the fan community, like in Japan, in Europe, in England, even in South America, or even in different areas, like in comic strips, like comic books, a community is just amazing. And I could speak about it all day. And that's pretty much what I get to do for a living now.
Well, and you're doing it now with me, so I appreciate that.
Yes.
But I do
yes.
think, you know, like you touched on a lot of stuff, and, you know, I think, you know, what you're very good at also is, you know, it's context. It's really all about context, you know, and yes, anybody could get on their keyboard or their phone and hurl insults and virtue signal and all this other stuff that we do on social media all the time. But I think, you know, context is key. And also, like, an interesting thing about like comics, this is kind of like a two-part thing. Comics now, and I want to get your opinion on this. Comics have always been sort of an embarrassment of riches, but I feel like within the last 3 years, it's like a ridiculous embarrassment of riches between creative teams, artists, writers, like you said, editors and colorists. It's like, I feel like it's like this magnificent renaissance that's been kind of going on over the last couple of years. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because I really think we're seeing the intersection of a lot of different areas of comics, basically. I don't want to say thriving, because I still wish the pay was better for everybody. But yeah. I think that's true for anything. But just, we're in an age now, like when I first started comics, a journalism, it was very different, where comics live and died off the money that comics itself earned. But with its connections to entertainment media and how trades and getting things collected and being able to not just think in the short term for comics, but in the long term, where even if the single issues don't sell, the trade is just a part of the business plan, and their business plans are set up to work for that. I think that encourages what could be said would be too risky maybe 15 years ago. It encourages kinds of works that's now, that's not as much of a risk. And so that encourages a lot of new ideas and just be willing to try stuff. That could be things from like the great work that Vault Comics is doing. The amazing, we're going to look back at this as a historical moment, the way Webtoons and Tapas has been flourishing, and this whole new areas of fandom is being served in a way that maybe we couldn't before, or we as an industry didn't, that could do better before. Could have done better before, but now we're doing it. Like, I'm doing some research piece without giving any secrets away for Raina Telgemeier, who people know from Smile and Drama and things like that, and how she got her start as a webcomic artist doing at a site that did webcomics for free called Girl-O-Matic, where at the time, like, I'm reading the journalism at the time where it was looked at this anomaly, not just in terms of it just being female creators, but just webcomics still just as an anomaly. And this sounds like Webtoon and Tapas like 17, 18 years ago, and just how it kind of presaged a thing. And now Miss Telgemeier is kind of the face of comics to many readers. It's amazing. I feel like I didn't like answer your question, so if you want to remind me.
I think you kind of did, and how like comics now are in the last 3 years in embarrassment of riches as far as like quality work.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's so much good things happening. There's so many good people doing work, and just the amount of, especially I don't want to say because of the pandemic, or that people should feel like they were required to get a lot of work done during the pandemic, because that affects everybody. And I don't judge anybody who didn't get a lot of work done. Like, there's a lot of projects that I wanted to do during the pandemic that I didn't do. I judge myself, but I don't judge others for that. Like, that's just, that's my personal problem.
I worked on Project Alcoholism during the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm going through that, and like therapy helps me deal with judging myself, but I'm better about not judging like others. But the work we are getting able to see here is just amazing. A lot of people are been given opportunities that may not exist before or not in this number, and a lot of fresh voices that we may have not have seen before are getting chances to do some revolutionary work. And all of it's seemingly available and all coming out at the same time. And like, I find myself now, like, even though I'm very fortunate that I get press copies of some books, like I'm still even like looking at, like, I still spend a good amount of money on comics, like older comics, newer comics, things like that, that I just want to buy from the personal enjoyment. And even that's just like, I'm looking at it, I'm spending more on comics now than I have ever. Yeah. And it's great.
That's always a good thing. I think we're in the same boat where, like, I do have, you know, like the press credentials to get the preview issues, but you know what? I'm still going to buy them. Like, yeah. I'll read it on a PDF, but I'm still going to go to the store and buy it. What are some of your favorites now? Like, what are you picking up weekly? If you go to the store weekly, you know, like, what are some of the things that really like stand out to you as a fan?
I think it's been lost, but Saga returning, like,
oh my God,
I think the buzz is that Saga has returned and that's passed, but I still think we're very, I keep saying the word privileged, but we're just like overlooking the fact that Saga is coming out every month again.
Yeah.
I think it's too quickly. Like, I'm a journalist. Like, you could say it's my fault, although I'm not at a site where I can write at this point.
Yeah.
But it's not being covered like the event that it is. I know it's a different kind of thing than what journalism traditionally covers, because I don't know, there's not a hero dying or coming back to life in every issue, and there's not some major change that's going to, I don't know, change the whole universe. I think Saga is a different kind of comic. The way we were kind of spoiled with The Walking Dead when it came out, and we only realized it when it stopped coming out. I could talk about Saga all day. I'm really into the DC comics that's been done through a webtoon, like on the web platform. Like, those are really amazing and different. I'm doing some rereading on the manga side. Like, I'm rereading all of Naruto, like back to back, and also all the sequels and spinoffs. I'm really excited to do that, because I think the second reread, when I kind of know what's going to happen, but I don't remember those specific events, like, is very exciting for me. I'm also I guess I can say this for a project. I'm reading a lot of memoir comics. Like I mentioned Raina Telgemeier, but just looking broader at this memoir comics, like, I'm old enough to know that, like, before, these comics were referred to as autobio comics, almost with an X, like autobio comics was this thing. But memoirs have been around in nonfiction for decades. And I don't know if it's a slight kind of course correction or just terminology changed, or maybe I'm just so like analytical that I think about nomenclature that much, but there's amazing memoir stories being told in comics. I'm really just plowing through those, mostly written by the people themselves and their expenses, but also some biography comics by like others. Like, I read a good Karl Marx graphic novel the other day. I don't have the name of it offhand, but I'm looking at it over on the shelf over here. But like, if someone approaches me on social media afterwards, I can give them the link to it. But yeah, like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm enjoying today. Like, I'm still reading like DC and Marvel stuff, but in this kind of break between Newsarama and what's next, I'm really able to kind of recenter myself, similar to what I did when I was judging like the Eisner Awards and the Harvey Awards, and really kind of be able to take in the breadth of comics and pick and choose and just kind of see new things. I'm really excited. I'm spending a lot of money like directly with my comic store, and I try not to spend it just at one comic store, because I feel like I don't know, not that I love my comic shop person, like, he understands it, but whenever I go on trips, I try to go there, and just not that I wait to buy certain books at certain places, but I go on trips with just, I know I'm going to spend this much money, this is my budget, whenever I go somewhere, like as part of Read Pop, it's not revealing any secrets. I'll be going to a lot of places, going to a lot of conventions, but I'm also making a point to go to the comic shops of those towns to really see those experiences, because it's kind of like how people talk about record stores. But even before the vinyl like revival, it's kind of just a snapshot of a scene, and I want to take a part of that and spend some money and read comics like in my travels. Like I find myself more and more like doing intensive like reading on airplanes in like while I'm like waiting for something, or just spending days again just like reading way too many comics in like one sitting, like the Naruto, for example.
I think we're in the same boat with a lot of that stuff. Like I love, whenever I go on a trip, I will make it a point to visit at least one or two stores wherever I'm at, you know. And we had recently gone on a trip to Maine, and I'm failing to remember the name of the comic shop, and I apologize for that, but we stumbled on this comic store that was like my personal heaven almost, you know. It was like action figures, horror stuff.
We're gonna have to look this up now. Like people should tell us on social media like what comic store they think you're talking about.
I'd
love to get some recs.
Heavy metal music playing. It's in Portland, Maine. The entire staff was as friendly as could be, and this is the thing that did it for me. Every current issue was bagged and boarded and ready to go, you know, without an extra charge, just on the shelf, boom, ready with like their signage and everything. Very cool shop. I ended up spending a ton of money there, as I usually do at comic stores, and I'm like, you know what, like this is great. And the next day there was a snowstorm. I sat on the couch in our Airbnb and just like read all the stuff I bought, and then the stuff I brought with me, because I also travel with comics, you know. It's like, it's such a like an interesting, wonderful thing.
Yeah, I try not to travel with comics. I try digital. Like I do a lot of like on the flight or travel to somewhere, like I'm reading digital. But by the time I spend some money, I'm reading in print on the way back usually.
What does your collection look like? And clearly, you've been a lifelong fan of comics. Like what does it for you? Like what's your special stuff? Do you have a collection? You know, like talk to me about that.
I'll try not to give a long answer here. My wife and I went through a Category 5 hurricane in 2018. I lost a portion of my collection, and it made me rethink collecting. That being said, I have a storage unit full of long boxes, probably 30 long boxes. That's pretty much my childhood, teenage, young adult collection.
Right on.
And early into my career. But around the mid 2000s for work, a lot of the comics I started being sent was sent digitally. Mm-hmm. I still have like PDF press copies of some stuff and printed out books of bygone publishers that are just printed in staples from publishers you never heard of anymore. But I do have a lot of collections, like in my room here. I'm fortunate to have a lot of collections, a lot of bookshelves. I just ordered a couple of bookshelves from IKEA, and I'm low staffing those up and trying to come up with organizations.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is digital now. Like digital to me is kind of the way I'll probably first read things. But if there's things that I want to own like perpetually, I'll get it in a trade edition, just for the kind of ornate physicality of it, to be able to have it in a printed thing. And no matter what happens in regards to, I don't know, try not to say comicsology, like right now, like whatever changes, it's in this static format that I'm familiar with, and I can bookmark, I can earmark, I can even put notes in there. Like I'm like, my wife will tell me this, like she'll sometimes read some of my comics and just find printouts of interviews where it's kind of like I make my own back matter and just put it into the book. And it's like printouts of sites that are no longer around, or old versions of Newsarama that are no longer around.
Wow.
Where it's kind of like I make my own back matter of just material and put it in these books. And so like having that physicality to it like helps tremendously. So
That's definitely an enriching experience, though. Like as far as, you know, maybe 5 years later, you'll find that one hardcover that you just want to read, and then you'll have like all this stuff in there.
Yeah, like it is in some cases. Like I pulled out a All-Star Superman. Like, I have the big absolute edition, but I also have it in the single, and not the single issue. I'll have the single issues in a box somewhere, but I have the original trades that are just soft cover. And one of those I found the other day, my unedited transcript of an interview with Grant Morrison, not the published version that was on Newsarama, that's still lost on a, like, you can probably find it on like a Wayback Machine, but like the unedited version with all like the, I don't know, the ancillary conversations that we had. And I think that's just, for me, that's an interesting like artifact of a time, because it was just after Grant had finished it. So it's looking back, and yeah, I think it's part of it's nostalgia for me, but I'd still say that All-Star Superman like holds up as kind of one of the great books that have come out in the past 20 years. And if anybody wants to talk to me about that, they'll come meet me at a convention. I'll be glad to verbally spar with someone like over that, or do a panel. Let's do one of the two.
I would like to see you do an All-Star Superman panel with everybody who's on the creative team and you leading it, and talking to Grant and Frank Quitely, and just kind of getting to, I love All-Star Superman too. I feel like it hit like it came out at a weird time that in my experience, I think I was working at a comic shop at the time when it came out. And I remember it hitting customers in a really weird way, specifically because of the art. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this is amazing.
Yeah, like at the time, I remember covering it. Even it was seen as a bit risky for that kind of art. And now it just seems like a no-brainer. Like, why wouldn't you have Frank Miller? But it's now like when people think about it, it's like, well, you'd have the Frank Quietly of All-Star Superman drawing All-Star Superman's a no-brainer. But at the time, it was still revolutionary. Like, even though he did the JLA arc, he did Authority, he had done
X-Men.
New X-Men, and almost did some other interesting stuff at Marvel that if someone catches me at a convention, I'll tell you about. But how they did that, but how it was in some ways kind of an answer to Marvel's Ultimate Comics as a way of a new reader friendly approach, but in a very different way. Like, you wouldn't want to see All-Star Superman 13 with a different writer or artist, but it kind of stands on its own. And I think it took a lot of like ballsiness, a part of DC, not to try to continue it with somebody else doing it. But yeah, I would love to do a panel with the creators and also the original like editor at the time, and also Paul Levitz, the editor who was in charge of everything at the time, just to know how much of an ask this was to get it through the pipeline, that this could be done with DC's like kind of franchise character.
Yeah, that time period I remember being very fascinating too, especially with like that advent of like the All-Star books, you know, where it was kind of announced and it was like a fresh start. So you had like your All-Star Batman, your All-Star Superman, and then I think All-Star Wonder Woman was the one that was like super late or never really got off the ground as much as it should.
Yeah, I think there was like issues with that. I think just because it was so much of, they're not vanity projects, but very special projects, that so deadlines weren't as concurrent. But also, it didn't help that there was some, just happened to remember, I don't even know if it's on the internet anymore, there was announced All-Star books that never happened. There was All-Star Flash. There was All-Star Aquaman that was announced. There was All-Star Batgirl announced, never happened. But then there was others. But then there was also the Earth One things kind of changed and took over that as well. So it kind of changed. Like, it was like an interesting moment in time, but I'm sure it was pretty expensive to produce. So that may be why that they didn't just make a whole all-star universe.
Yeah. You mentioned people coming up to you at conventions. I noticed on your Twitter account, you have the list of your convention appearances. Are you excited to get out there again?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm a little bit nervous. I was at the last convention before the pandemic, March 2020, C2E2. And I remember that we were starting to wear masks, starting to joke about kind of social etiquette in those times, and then everything shut down. And I was really nervous about that. Like, I have health issues. People in my family have health issues and still do to this day. So the idea of going to a convention was just unheard of for me or anyone or doing any kind of travel. And I'm in Florida, and Florida's can be a dangerous place to live.
Yes.
I don't want to speak too much about that, but
no, I understand.
Find me like at a convention and I'll talk about that too. But then when the idea of conventions started happening again, there's a couple that I thought about that I was like, I'm not ready for that just for myself. But that I did do C2E2 2022 in December. So it was Chicago in December with masks and everything. It was actually nice. And I was kind of encouraged by the reality of what I was seeing happening. Like Repop wasn't my employer then. I wasn't in talks with them then about anything. So just so you can look back on my social media feed. Like I was nervous, but I was impressed about and how the rules were strict but understandable, and it seemed to have a level of safety. And so looking at the convention season going forward, I had one idea of what I'd be attending, but then when I got this opportunity at ReadPop and how it's manifesting, as I'll be very fortunate to be able to go to many conventions, not just ReadPop shows, but I'm looking forward to San Diego. I'm looking forward to D23 Expo. Assuming things remain as safe as they seem to be now for like everyone, including myself and like my family, like I sometimes worry about bringing home like the idea of like the joke about con crud. I don't even know if you can make that anymore, but the idea of bringing home and just the pressures on that. I've already like internally figured out like safeguards in case I do feel like I have something about quarantining.
Yeah.
But I'm cautiously optimistic about everything. I think there's strong things in place, and it seems like the systems are able to accurately respond, like to ramp up prevention measures or ramp it down for the scenario. But so yeah, like that, all that preface aside, like yeah, I'm very excited to get out there and see people. So I think comic conventions are the break room, are the community for comic creators that all work from home, that don't see like each other, not just comics creators, but comics journalists and all sorts of staff, even before the pandemic. Now, like even after the pandemic, like much of DC and much of Marvel and much of the other publishers still work remotely. So conventions is kind of this crossroads where people can meet up, and there's going to be a lot of things happening on the floor and after the shows, and I hope everybody's safe and respectful to everybody, but more importantly, just safe on other levels so we can enjoy this. I'm really excited. Like I'm I think my next one is going, I don't know when this is going to air, but my next one is going to be Star Trek Mission Chicago, and then Star Wars, and then I'll be doing some proper comic conventions later on in the year. And I'm really excited for that, and just what my role will be fitting into that in a slightly different way than before.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. And I think there's always, for me, there's always been something so delicious about a good Comic-Con. You know, like I go to New York Con every year. You know, unfortunately, during the pandemic, we didn't get it. But this past year, I think ReadPop did a fantastic job. With how it was laid out, you know, how everything was kind of spaced. It was a bit of a fresh, it was a bit of a relief for me, because I know exactly how dense that convention can get. And the fact that you could walk around and not have to be belly to back to somebody was pretty excellent, you know, and everybody seemed like, you know, they took the mask thing like very to heart, you know, there was a lot of safety going on. But then when that anime con hit the month after that, that's when shit hit the fan.
Yeah, but then later, according to like the last reports I read that the anime con wasn't the super spreader event that they're worried about. But I'm not a scientist, I'm not sure, so I'm still watching things, going to be cautious. And I know the C2E2 that I went to in December wasn't the normal C2E2, but yeah. I was very thankful that we were able to have such an event and like able to celebrate what we all love in such a way. Like even the attendance was less, I think just, I couldn't see smiles behind people's masks, but like I saw like smile lines everywhere, and everybody seemed to be having a good time. And I hope everybody had a good time, and I hope we can again this year.
Absolutely. I think it's going to happen. I think everything's on an upswing now. Hopefully everybody stays safe and we can all go out there and enjoy the stuff that we love again in a safe and healthy way. Chris, I got a couple more questions for you and then I'm going to let you go. And I ask this from everybody. What is the sandwich of your dreams?
What is the sandwich of my dreams? Okay. There is it was an actual sandwich, but then it became mythical because there was a place that I used to work at that had a cafe next to it called Panama Java. It doesn't exist anymore. It's not a chain. It was subsumed when Starbucks came to town, but they had this chicken tarragon sandwich that I just cannot forget that I've tried to replicate. I've kindly asked friends that are chefs or pseudo chefs to try to recreate it. And I don't have the words for how great it was to be able to replicate it. And it's a chicken tarragon sandwich.
Isn't that nuts when you find that one sandwich and it's just an elusive thing. Like this is the sandwich I always bring up. This is a little sandwich talk for 2 minutes. You're familiar with New York, I'm assuming, at least like yes. Pretty familiar with it. There's a thing in Brooklyn every year called Smorgasburg, where it's like tons of pop-up like places, like restaurants and bars will have like their signature dishes or whatever, just to kind of get you to like come to their places. There was one place called Heroes and Villains that did not have a storefront. They just strictly did pop-ups and they had a buttermilk chicken sandwich called the Sandow Calrissian. And it was the greatest chicken sandwich to this day that I've ever had in my life. And it's like that elusive chicken tarragon where it's like, where, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like comics. Like for me, like it's great, but then this kind of nostalgia happens and it kind of colors our vision. And then we have to question like, was it really that good? Or is it just the memory of it being good? Kind of leaving this amazing aftertaste that it's kind of just, stayed with us. Like I don't know, like I've tried other chicken tarragon sandwiches and I don't measure up, and that could be my failings of not letting it stand on its own. But yeah, that's my white whale, like finding that chicken tarragon sandwiches.
Now I want to ask you something based on exactly what you said. Like, what is something that you've off the top of your head that you've gone back and read that you loved based off of pure nostalgia, and then now as maturity descends on us, have you gone, whoa, this is not that great?
Okay. I'll first say that something that was great that I was feared wasn't. There's this graphic novel anthology that came out when I was a kid called Garfield Nine Lives.
Okay.
like that is amazing. Like that is the stuff of nightmares. It is amazing. And rereading it as an adult, like I was worried. I was like, this isn't going to hold up. This isn't going to hold up. And it did. And there's stuff I saw in it, but at for things that didn't live up to the hype, I got into comics through really through Transformers, the early Marvel Transformers. I have the first like issue my mom bought and it's got my name written on it. And my mom's like very cursive school teacher handwriting, and rereading it now, it just doesn't match up. And I'm just like, I really must have loved those toys. And maybe it just spoke to me as a child in a way that I just as an adult can't wrap my head around. Like maybe it's because I don't have the toys anymore to really equate that. But yeah, those early Marvel Transformers comics didn't match up. And I think I realized pretty quickly, even before I reread them, that was a lot of nostalgia talking there.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I remember those too. I think we're probably around the same age, and I think it was maybe issue 3 where you had either Cliff Jumper or Bumblebee in a wrestling ring with somebody, and I did remember. I read that a few years ago, and I was like, ah, wow, this is great for a 6-year-old.
Yeah, just stuff now that you would wonder about. Like, there's a villain named Circuit Breaker, who looked like the villain from, I think, Superman 3, where she has like the circuits on her.
Okay.
And like that was, I don't know, reading back now, I'm like, huh, like this wasn't a kid's comic. I'm I don't know, just some of it's just still just complicated for me to deal with. And maybe this needs to be in like an article. Like this is how some of my articles start. Just revisiting stuff and just trying to give context for myself and just thinking through it. So.
I think that's the connective tissue of this whole chat is context. So, Chris, where can everybody find you, and you know, what do you want people to click on?
Okay. I will not give out my home address. I hope you understand. If they want to find me, you can find me on my website, chrisarrant.com. I need to do an update on that. But I'm pretty available on social media. I'm on Twitter, Chris Arrant. I got in early, got my name there. That's A-R-R-A-N-T. That's pretty much the only one I use for public. If you want to read my work, a lot of it is on Games Radar. Some of it's still on CBR and iFanboy and other places. I still have a book that came out several years ago, Modern Masters, Cliff Chang. It's a long form interview with Cliff Chang right around the time of even him finishing Wonder Woman. So before Paper Girls, so maybe we should do a sequel, like Cliff, like we should talk. But it was a long form piece about some amazing stuff, including an Aquaman graphic novel that him and Brian Azzarello pitched, but also how the New 52 Wonder Woman started as a Vertigo book and how it changed.
Oh, wow.
That's really interesting. I keep going back to that just as a fan. I will be attending most every Read Pop show, and as well as San Diego and D23 Expo. I'm already bummed out about not going to WonderCon or HeroesCon, but I hope to be able to go in 2023. So that's where you can find me.
Chris, listen, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. I hope you had a decent time.
Yes, I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me. Thank you for asking me to be a part of this.
No, absolutely, man. Like, I hope we get to talk more in the future.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Cool. It was a pleasure talking to Chris. I always enjoy talking to people behind the scenes. Listen, there's somebody out there writing these articles that you like, giving you information that you need. And I think him being a comics ambassador is pretty fantastic. Great guy. And I'm excited to see what he's doing in the future. So stay tuned. Follow him on social. Follow me on social. Subscribe to this show and subscribe on iTunes. And I will see you guys later. Mwah.